Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Friday. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A lot of things coming up in the next few days. The start of the Washington State legislative session is on Monday, so we're going to be focusing a lot on some of the bills that have been introduced or perhaps will be introduced. Public safety is certainly top of my mind, so we'll see what happens there. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on Monday that is the day the legislative session officially begins. But coming up on the show today, it is January 6th, and I don't feel the need every anniversary of January 6th to tell you yet again what a national embarrassment the Capitol riot was, but there is an element of not only January 6th of 2021, but also how it's being reflected on today that just continues to bother me to the core. So we're going to get into that. Plus, there are national shortages across a variety of sectors in the workforce. We've been hearing about this really throughout the pandemic. I think there's a couple reasons for that, but you have folks who, you know, some of them realized, I think they could do their jobs at home, et cetera. And so you have some industries that they just continue to be short-staffed. But Washington Governor Jay Inslee is now complaining about this. And I'm positive that you already know what I have to say about that, but we'll dive into it anyway. Plus, Washington State, some other states, you know, one of the big topics of 2022 was mass shootings. And so naturally after that, you have Democrats that introduce gun control legislation. Same is happening this legislative session in Washington State. But meanwhile, the number of Washingtonians with an active concealed pistol license skyrocketed in 2022. We'll talk about the latest numbers on that. Also, Florida Report with my sister, Ron DeSantis, was sworn in for his second term as Florida governor. The speech he gave, though, sounded much more like a speech for a bid for the presidency. So, of course, it's fueling rumors about 2024. And also coming up, we're going to be joined by a street artist, or as some people might call them, a graffiti artist, who started off, admits she did, you know, some illegal vandalism in her life for the sake of art. But now she has turned it into a business, and this is what she does full time, painting beautiful murals. And so I'm going to bring her on to talk about the story we discussed on Wednesday, which is the city of Seattle is overrun by graffiti. It's on every wall and bypass. And there is a debate, apparently, about how exactly to deal with it. So I wanted to ask someone who has been involved in graffiti and street art what she thinks could be done or should be done to try to cut back on the amount of illegal graffiti in the city of Seattle. But let's start with January 6th. As I mentioned, I don't feel the need to continue to rehash my thoughts on January 6th. I've been very clear where I stand on not only January 6th, but on Donald Trump. It's all just an embarrassment to me. That being said, you know, when I look at how it was remembered today, I don't want to say like how we marked, I guess, the anniversary, quote unquote, of January 6th, there is one element of this story that just continues. I wouldn't say it baffles me, but it is just so indicative of that problem with putting affiliation before action. You know, we say on the podcast, put actions before affiliation. Judge someone based on their actions, not their political affiliation. And one of the really hypocritical aspects to the response to January 6th from both parties for me is their treatment of law enforcement. So when you look at these Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol, you know, Republicans have been the party of law and order, the party that respects law enforcement, that treats law enforcement like heroes. And then you saw how January 6th rioters treated law enforcement at our nation's capital. And then you also saw a lot of Republican members of Congress, not all, but a lot, who downplayed that violence, downplayed that activity. And to me, it just flew in the face of what Republicans say they stand for, law and order, against rioting, against that kind of unrest that we had seen in Democratic cities all through 2020. And then also, you know, a party that's supposed to stand up for law enforcement. And I thought, where are you, you know, in standing up for these law enforcement officers that were attacked, pushed back, things thrown at them on January 6th? So there was the hypocrisy there. And then there continues to be, and we saw examples of this today, this hypocrisy from Democrats about all of a sudden, they're acting like the party that respects law enforcement. You saw everything that happened in 2020. Democrats just staying silent on all the vitriol, all the hate spewed at police officers. We saw that in a very real way in Seattle. Since then, we've lost like 500 officers who are like, I'm not dealing with your hate. And then you have, because it's politically palatable, because January 6th was an instance of the rights violence against police officers, now all of a sudden these police officers, these Capitol police officers, the Democrats are celebrating and thanking. It's like, where were you? Do you either like and respect police officers or you don't? You don't just get to put on a show when it's politically advantageous to you. And I really feel like that's what's happening here. You had Democrats and President Joe Biden today honoring some of these Capitol police officers.
And it's not exaggeration to say America owes you, owes you all. I really mean this. A debt of gratitude. One we can never fully repay unless we live up to what you did. Live up to what you did.
And again, I believe that Capitol Police officers deserve to be honored for that day. I truly do. But it's the picking and choosing of when you support, don't support law enforcement, when you support, don't support attacks on law enforcement that bothers me to the core. And I think most of us see that. I think most of us, like in the middle Americans or rationally, independently, critically thinking Americans, can look at that and say, okay, you guys are all full of shit. But then there's some who just buy into it hook, line, and sinker, like, oh, Democrats really respect law enforcement. Look what they're doing for the Capitol Police. It's like, okay, all right, whatever you say. And then it's like, well, Republicans are the party that supports law enforcement. Well, yes, if you were consistent through January 6th, but if you didn't stand up for those Capitol officers, then I really don't want to hear what you have to say on the matter. So anyway, it is the second anniversary of the attack on our nation's Capitol, and Democrats want to make sure that every single American recognizes it and that they get to put a foot forward as the party that supports law enforcement. I mentioned that the legislative session in Washington state is starting on Monday, and one of the issues that both political parties have said they want to deal with is the workforce shortage, particularly in really important sectors where you've got, you know, matters of life and death, hospitals, etc. I'll give you 5 seconds of silence for you to fill in the blank of what I'm going to say about Governor Inslee pointing to the worker shortage. Go ahead, 5 seconds. Yeah, exactly. This is a guy who fired people over the vaccine mandate and still won't hire them back. So he puts out this post on his Medium page, which Medium is just like a place where you can go and post an article if you want. And the governor will sometimes post articles there, which I like. I find it helpful. It's more thorough than a press release. But this one, he titled it National Workforce Shortages Strain Public Services. He writes, and I'm assuming his staff wrote, but his name is on it, so we'll say he writes, in a tight labor market, workers are tougher to find, tougher to keep, and they command a higher salary. State agencies are investing in recruitment and retention at a cost. Across the country and across economic sectors, the challenge to recruit and retain workers has been acute. For state agencies, labor market trends have been disruptive. Ferries need tending, hospitals need staffing. Without enough workers, state services suffer. Well, you don't freaking say. You don't freaking say. What were we talking about this time last year? Speaking of state services suffer. We did a story on how the mountain passes closed for 3 days, how you had local jurisdictions that were trying to help out the state. The state didn't have enough plow truck drivers. The state had fired people whose only job was to sit in a plow truck or a truck alone during the day because they didn't get the COVID vaccine. And even if I, sitting here today, give Governor Jay Inslee the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, at the time he was making decisions based on the best available information, which I don't think was true, even if I give him the benefit of the doubt, you fast forward a year, more than a year since the vaccine mandate, and there is no remaining argument for it. Remember, the governor did not mandate boosters. So that means, like me, you could have gotten the vaccine, gosh, when did I get it? In the summer of 2021. So a year and a half ago, it's not in my body anymore. I didn't get the boosters, but I could be a state worker because I got the initial vaccine a year and a half ago. And someone who never got it but wants to get hired today couldn't get it. So again, there's no remaining common sense basis, public health basis for the vaccine mandate as it exists right now. So when the governor goes on Medium, writes this big, long article about the labor shortage and says, ferries need tending. Hospitals need staffing. You fired ferry workers. And what happened? We had canceled runs because of staffing issues. Nobody wanted to admit that it was made worse by firings of the vaccine mandate. I mean, the vast majority of state workers today complied with the mandate or got some sort of approved exemption, but no one wanted to account for the number of state workers who retired, who left on their own without being fired. He says hospitals need staffing. Well, you fired nurses who didn't get the COVID-19 vaccine. It's no wonder hospitals need staffing. And even if that's just a handful of people at a hospital, one nurse, two nurses, three extra nurses on staff can be the difference between life and death for people. So I just don't take the governor seriously when he talks about the worker shortage. Until you hire back or at least offer people their jobs back who were fired over a vaccine mandate that no longer has an impact or a basis in reality, then I just genuinely cannot take your care or concern seriously for some of our public sectors that are short workers. I've had a ton of you asking how I've lost so much weight in the last 2 months. Which, thank you. It's such a compliment when you say, "Brandy, you look great." I am a strong, independent woman, but I love compliments. I know some people don't accept compliments these days or think they're offensive, compliments about their weight. But no, if you tell me I look good, I'm going to be like, "Thank you." So I had a bunch of you asking what I did. And back in November, I started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. It's in Kirkland. And look, is it magic? No. Do I have to eat healthier than I did when I gained 42 pounds during the pandemic? Yeah, but I found it so easy to stick to. I didn't have to do any prepackaged meals. I didn't have to go into an office to get weighed. I didn't have to count calories. I didn't have to exercise, although I tried to get a lot of steps in. And I lost, like I said, 25 pounds in 60 days. And to me, that sells the program itself. Right now, I'm in a maintenance phase. And then starting in February, I'm going to try to drop the last 15 pounds I have left of my COVID weight. And then I'll be back to my pre-COVID weight. And I am determined not to let that weight come back on. I'm getting married in September. And so I've got all this motivation to get back to where I was and to stay that way. So if you're interested in trying to shed maybe some extra weight you gained during the pandemic, do what I did. Check out the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. You can visit them at eastsideweightlossclinic.com to get a free consultation with Dr. Coogan, who's awesome. He'll answer all your questions. Or you can give them a call at 425-354-3020. That's 425-354-3020. And don't forget, if you do start the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, let me know, because it is so much easier to do any sort of health and wellness journey when you have other people. So I was thinking we could build kind of a little community of people who are trying to get back in shape after a pandemic where we apparently ate too much and sat around too much. Mass shootings were a huge topic of conversation in 2022, and we have the same pattern after mass shootings. You've got, you know, outrage, then you've got people who say we need to ban guns or limit the possession of certain guns. You got legislatures or Democrats try to propose things. And so that's what's happening this year. As I mentioned, the legislative session in Olympia starts on Monday, and there are several new proposals banning the sale of semi-automatic rifles, requiring you to have a permit in order to purchase a gun, and some other things like that. But one of the things I find interesting about that, because Washington State is very blue, it's very progressive. And in fact, the two people pushing these new policies are the attorney general and the governor. But this little statistic that was sent to me by the Second Amendment Foundation, I thought was really interesting. Washington State in 2022 saw a skyrocketing number of people who have a concealed pistol license. In 2022, the state added 57,000 active CPL holders, which it's almost at. So right now, there are 696,000 active CPLs in circulation in Washington State. And this is information data from the Department of Licensing. And the record for Washington State in a single year is 700,000 CPL. So we're like pushing against the record for the largest number of people to have a CPL. And I was kind of contemplating, okay, what are the reasons for this? Because I am one of them. I think I told you guys on the show that I got a CPL a few months ago. And I'll talk about that in a moment, but I think there's a couple obvious explanations for this. One of them is whenever you have the government trying to restrict gun rights, you have people who are trying to exercise their gun rights before it's too late or try to get in so maybe they'll be grandfathered in. Although I don't think CPLs are at risk, at least not right now in Washington state. But honestly, I think the more obvious explanation is crime and low police staffing. And that was the case for me. I'm pretty sure I told you guys this story. I was walking my dogs down a trail next to a river that I'd been at a million times, not far from my house. And this guy who looked like a drug user to me rode up on a bike, pulled in front of us on this trail, and pulled out this like 7-inch knife, like, and it was all kind of in an instant, although it felt slow motion. But then this other couple was coming up the trail. And he turns and he starts chopping at these blackberry bushes with this knife. And I think he had something else planned, intended, but that when he saw this couple, he just was acting as if he was like cutting down these bushes on the trail. So it was super weird. I went straight from there to the police department to apply for a CPL. I haven't used it yet. I'm not carrying right now, but I have it. And it was because I felt incredibly vulnerable. Never felt that kind of exposed and helpless in my life. And I'm like, I'm never going to feel that helpless again. And so I do think in Washington state, Democrats and progressive leaders who have been saying in recent weeks that the number of guns on our street are responsible for crime, which again, I don't think is a reality. They should be looking at this and saying, okay, we're close to having the most people with a concealed pistol license in our state that we've ever had. And what is the reason for that? And I really think that it comes down to the level of crime and also the lack of police response because you have police agencies that are so short-staffed. And I think that's terrifying for people. You know, we've seen people take matters into their own hands when it comes to like auto theft, the theft of, God, what are those things in the car? The catalytic converters, which I don't recommend, by the way. Your life and your safety is not worth your property, but you can tell the frustration among folks who just want to feel safe in their own communities. They want to know and believe that if they call 911, if their life is in danger, that they're going to have a police officer who can respond to them in time. And I don't know that folks are confident of that right now. And so, you know, to me, that should be a wake-up call for Democrats. If your issue is guns, well, you've got more people applying for CPLs almost in our state than ever before. And you really ought to sit and consider what the reasons are for that and what you can do to make people feel more safe, make people feel like they don't need to carry a gun around with them. On the show on Wednesday, I had this rant about the situation with graffiti in Seattle. So the mayor of Seattle has come out and he's cracking down on graffiti. They've already arrested some prolific graffiti, quote unquote, artists, aka vandals, who were spray painting their name all over the city, on every surface available to them. So that was great. But then I mentioned on the show on Wednesday how Crosscut put out this article acting like it's some big controversy, that there is a gray area between graffiti and art. And it's like, to me, no. If you have permission to do it, then yeah, great. That's awesome. Go for it. If you don't, then that's vandalism and it's against the law. And I think those two things can be treated very differently. And again, I don't think there's any gray area there. But is the mayor's approach going to be successful? Is it something that is going to actually dissuade individuals from committing illegal acts of graffiti? I wanted to talk to today on Fridays with Friends, someone who has done graffiti, yes, illegally, someone who now makes a living doing street art and really beautiful work, but admits that, yeah, there are times in my life where I did it on people's property without permission. This is actually a friend of my sister's down in Miami. Her name is Diana Didi Contreras. And it's really interesting. And why I want to talk to her is Miami is a fascinating city in the way they deal with things. And they have this neighborhood called Wynwood, where they've essentially let these street artists take over. And they're like, look, this whole neighborhood is yours. And that neighborhood has really embraced it. And it's given some of these folks an artistic outlet to channel what they were doing. And so I wanted to talk to Didi, not only about sort of what drove her to, yes, do something illegally, but turn it into this business and livelihood for herself, but also what advice she would give to Seattle's mayor. Didi, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having me. Very excited.
Yeah, my sister connected us and she said that you're currently painting murals of her rabbits or something.
Oh, yeah. I'm painting a bunch of portraits of her bunnies, so like 14 portraits.
Of course, Miranda's going to be mortified that people now know she has 14 rabbits. They knew she had a lot. I don't know if they knew she had 14, so she's going to be the crazy rabbit lady.
Yeah.
So give me, what do you do right now? What do you do for a living when it comes to art?
I am a full-time artist. I just quit my teaching job last year. And I do murals, I do commission paintings, portraits, I do pet portraits. I do commercial work for like the stadiums. I collaborate with a lot of brands.
When somebody like commissions a mural, for instance, is it typically a business? Is it like a private citizen?
It used to be more private citizens. Now it's getting like about half businesses and half private citizens.
Gotcha. And we're going to show some pictures from your Instagram here. What is your specialty like? What are you known for or good at?
My favorite thing to paint are female faces, female figures. So anything with like that, I love.
So when you talk about, and I gave you a little scoop of what we're dealing with in Seattle, when we try to distinguish between graffiti or street art, is there... what would you say differentiates them, if anything?
I think that graffiti is, real graffiti is like illegal. That's, you know, how it started, you know, like rebelling against, you know, the government and the way things were. So street art can also be illegal, but I think that graffiti is a lot like names. People want to get their names out there. They want to get that fame, want to be known, you know, different neighborhoods by their name. And street art can be, you know, like an image, like a character, a symbol versus like a name.
How did you get involved in graffiti street art to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, I always grew up with kids who did graffiti. And, you know, I had art class with them. So I grew up, you know, seeing it all the time. I had it in my room with my name. They came to my house and did like a piece with my name in my room. So I always loved it, but I didn't do letters. I love to do characters. So I didn't know that I could do murals or characters until I saw like the boom of Wynwood in Miami, when all those, you know, international artists came and started painting these gigantic murals. That's when I started to, I never saw that before. So that's when I was like, wow, like I can maybe be a part of this. I never thought I would be doing it that large, but that really was very exciting for me. I love that kind of art. It also, I think, seemed rebellious too, you know, like it's a mix of rebellion with, you know, the fine art. So I could do both in one.
And I want to talk more about Wynwood in a moment, because I kind of look at Wynwood, and I've, of course, been there a few times with my sister, and I see it as a possible solution that Seattle can model itself after. But when it came from, you know, when you first started doing street art or graffiti, have you ever been in trouble for it?
Yes.
Arrested?
Yes.
Oh, no. What was, like, more than once?
No, one time, because I never, you know, I was really a good girl and I didn't want to destroy anybody's property. So I never, if I did do it illegally, it was always to beautify. I thought to make it better. It was always places that were like run down. But I went to New York to promote an art show that I had. They had flew me out to New York to do murals and to have an art show. And I had these little stickers of ballerinas that I always put around. And in Miami, it's, and everywhere else I've been, but especially Miami, they allow it. There's stickers everywhere on like private property, public property, everywhere. In Wynwood, everything is painted. So I didn't even consider it illegal. I thought it was really pretty. So I put a sticker, and then I wanted to take a picture of New York City in the background to promote that I was in New York. And undercover cops came and just grabbed me and like arrested me. And I was like, very shocked, and I was like, I'm not from here. And they're like, yeah, right. And they like took me to jail.
So you had mentioned, and you've obviously acknowledged, like, you've done it illegally some places with the intention to beautify. And I think the argument some people might have is, who are you to decide whether it's beautifying someone else's property? What would you say to that argument?
Yeah. It's paint, you can paint over it, but a lot of the graffiti people know don't do it to beautify. They do it to destroy or just get known. They don't care, take over. So it's a different attitude. Yeah. I've like all my experiences. Yeah, I mean, art is so subjective, but with me, they just loved it and want more with, my art.
Yeah, because if that, I can understand if it's a big mural, but also if you have a business owner who now they're tasked with, well, I don't like this or I don't want it, and now I have to pay to remove it or I have to pay to paint over it. And so I think that's one of the challenges I see is with doing it without permission. So explain to people, and I did a little bit earlier, but what is Wynwood for folks who have not been there?
Yeah, Wynwood is the largest, mural place in, I think, in the world, where every year artists from all over the world come and, paint the murals, and all the murals get, changed every year. So it's like this living canvas where it's always getting redone and painted over. And it's the largest in the world in one place. So you can go and see people from all ages, artists, you can see artists painting live. So it's really nice.
And do you currently today have work in Wynwood?
Yes. I used to have a lot more, but now that it's gotten so, the art has brought, people in so much interest that people open up restaurants and shops. And so all the walls that we used to have are now windows. So it's less walls. But yeah, I still have some.
When you have a whole, in Miami, you've got this whole neighborhood, and it is really cool. I mean, it is really awesome to walk through there. You've got a whole neighborhood where artists can kind of let loose, can do this street art. Do you think it's helped to minimize some of the illegal graffiti in other places of the city?
I think it has. I think a lot of the artists have gotten a name for themselves, what they wanted, the fame, the attention, and have gone on to have careers where they can make money. People know who they are, so they don't want, when I go to a place where they've hired me to paint a wall and I have friends that do graffiti, I'm like, please don't, because they're gonna, it's gonna look bad, and it's gonna, we want to better the town, not to destroy it, and people are gonna see that I brought this here. So we don't want that. We don't want that, that stigma. So Wynwood is also very visible. So if you want to be seen, people go paint there. It's an easy spot to paint.
So if you could give advice to the city of Seattle, because a lot of what I'm seeing that I know bothers me and I think brings down the quality of the city is the names. When I look at it, it doesn't scream art to me. It's just this is someone's name, or, they write a sentence or something, and it just doesn't look good. If you could give advice to Seattle's mayor about what you think would be effective in trying to deal with the illegal graffiti, what advice would you give to him?
Well, I think the two things are good. I think being tough, in New York, for example, there's even with the sticker, I went to jail for that. That news, people talk about it, so they don't want to continue it. In New York, be careful because people get arrested and get in trouble for it. So that plus also giving them an outlet, giving them a space where it is legal that they can put their work there. I think those two things together will help a lot.
Well, Diana, how can people follow your work and check it out?
Yes. The easiest place to follow me is Instagram. And my Instagram is DDRock, DIDIROK.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your insight. It's always interesting to hear the politician's take on this, and then someone who's been there, done that, and your advice for how to handle it. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you too for having me.
I also, when we were done with the interview with Dee Dee, I talked to her a little bit more, and the advice that she had for business owners was really interesting too. She said, avoid giving these illegal graffiti vandals any sort of attention. So a lot of them are out there putting their name on things, right? And so she said, if you're a business, avoid taking a picture of it and putting it on the news and giving it to the news, or taking a picture of it and putting it on social media to complain about it, because that is what they live for. They live for attention. They want people to see their work, to see their name. And so she recommended for businesses, as annoying as it is, and obviously the idea is prevention, but until that happens, painting over it quickly, not making a big deal out of it, not posting pictures of it, and then just showing that, hey, if you put something up here, it's going to be taken down the next day, and we're not going to tolerate it. She said she actually thought that that would be very effective. It's Friday, time to check in with my sister on our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. Happy New Year to you.
Hello.
New Year, Ron DeSantis is sworn in as the governor of Florida for a second time. I think the question is, how long is he going to stay? And there were some, I think, interesting takeaways from the speech that he gave.
Yeah, he his inauguration came on Tuesday, and it was a packed room. We talked about the VIP seats and stuff a few weeks back. Seems he was able to get a few people to donate some money to fill that space up. But he did an inaugural speech. It was about almost 20 minutes long, and a lot of the speech was geared towards a lot of national issues rather than local Florida issues, which probably is a pretty good gives us a pretty good idea that he's going to announce a presidential bid at some point in the near future. And then he also talked a little bit about some of the how Florida is the place where woke goes to die. And I think when he says that, he means a lot of his kind of fights against certain things like the parental acts and the education freedoms and things like that that he's been dealing with all year in regards to like critical race theory and transgender, you know, support within schools and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a favorite line of his. Let's play a little clip of Ron DeSantis's second inaugural address for the governorship.
Freedom lives here in our great sunshine state of Florida. It lives in the courage of those who patrol the streets and who keep our communities safe. It lives in the industry of those who work long hours to earn a living and raise their families. It lives in the dedication of those who teach our children. It lives in the determination of those who grow our food. It lives in the wisdom of our senior citizens. It lives in the dreams of the historic number of families who have moved from states across this country because they saw Florida as the land of liberty and the land of sanity. Over the past few years, as so many states in our country grinded their citizens down, we in Florida lifted our people up.
He's actually a pretty compelling speaker. I mean, he's a good speaker. I don't know who his speechwriter is, but I like the way that they write his speech. Maybe that's because I'm like a speech nerd. But yeah, you were mentioning, we talked on the show, on the segment a few months ago, how Florida lawmakers are trying to tweak the law so that if he runs for president, he doesn't have to resign as governor. And so maybe that's what he's waiting for.
I can only assume that that's what he's waiting for, because, I mean, we're getting into the beginning of what's going to be probably a pretty busy election advertising year. So I can't imagine he's going to want to wait too much longer if he does plan to announce a presidential bid. But he does have to wait for them to make that change, maybe not just for him, but just to the state legislature, that he's able to announce a run and still serve the state of Florida while he campaigns to become president. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to make that work for him and just for any future sitting governors that would like to, you know, put a bid in for a presidential run.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I'm kind of torn on that. I don't necessarily have an issue with it, but I know when our governor, Jay Inslee, ran, he was gone a lot. And so I think you really have to be honest with yourself about, can I do both? Can I campaign for president, especially like the length of our campaign seasons for president in the U.S.? It's like a year and a half. Can I campaign for president? Can I still effectively serve the people of my state? So he'll have to make that decision. Meanwhile, a lot of talk about what's happening on the southern border, but Florida's like its own border crisis. You guys had an influx of Cuban migrants trying to make the trek via water.
Yeah, this is something that happens all year round, but just over this weekend alone, Key West, and if anybody's ever been to Key West or takes a second look at it on a map, it's little. It is a little tiny blip in the ocean, pretty far out. It's only about 100 miles from Cuba, so that's usually where they make first landfall if they're lucky enough to get there and not catch the current all the way up to Miami. But Just over the weekend, they received over 600 migrants in Key West, and that is a huge stretch on the resources that they have down there for this kind of stuff. This is, they said, more than they've ever seen in one weekend, period. And so they were busing them out. I'm not sure where they go. I just looked around trying to find out where they take them from here. We do happen to have some areas in the southern part of the state and the northern part of the state where we keep people who come into this country illegally, but they were busing them out, and they're actually leaving some of their boats, you know, behind on people's properties, which a lot of homeowners were not too happy about either. So it's a lot. It's a lot for a small area like the Florida Keys to handle that many migrants coming in.
Yeah, I mean, people were livid about 50 in Martha's Vineyard. Obviously, I've been to Key West with you. It's pretty fun. I was there for my 30th, and I'm not going to say a lot, but there was a lot of tequila involved. So I have to imagine that's a very interesting place for migrants to first come upon in the United States. But people were losing it over 50 migrants in Martha's Vineyard. I mean, 500 or more in Key West is a lot. And quickly on the boat thing. So obviously these aren't nice boats that they're leaving behind. These are like derelict vessels. And the government is telling homeowners, like, you're on your own to figure out what to do with them?
Yeah, so they're not getting any immediate answers at all from like local and state government about what's going to happen with some of these vessels. And we're talking like dozens of boats, not just like one boat on one guy's property, like a lot of makeshift rafts and vessels. And I've even seen ones that are just giant pieces of styrofoam strapped together with like a troll motor on the back. So they can get pretty scary, pretty dangerous. One homeowner says that it's leaking gasoline all over their private beach and into the water. And they've been told that if they want them gone, they're going to have to call a company to tow them away. So it's probably uncharted territory about whose actual responsibility that is. But I would assume that it would fall on the government. But I don't know.
Well, it's a similar type of issue at the southern border, where you have these private landowners and they're land has been just littered with trash and, you know, clothing and paperwork and all sorts of things. And they are just left to deal with it on their own. One more thing, Miranda, we told people on the segment last week, does everyone in Florida not listen to the podcast? I thought every resident of Florida did.
They might need to. And if not the podcast, at least watch the news a little bit, because They didn't listen.
We told them not to shoot guns into the air to celebrate the new year. Obviously, people did. And some woman caught a 9mm in the head. She's okay.
Yeah, she's okay. She's alive. I mean, I'm assuming a lot of that force comes out of those bullets when it goes way up in the air and then finds its way back down via gravity. But she was at a friend's house celebrating the new year, and they were all outside watching the fireworks and just carrying on as normal people do when they're celebrating the new year. And she suddenly just got hit in the face right by her eye with what she described as like a metal softball is what it felt like to her. And so they really didn't know what had happened to her. And by the time that she got to the hospital, they pulled the slug out of her face, and they were all like, this was a celebratory bullet that you got hit with. So they are looking to see if at all they can figure out where that bullet came from, if anybody in the neighborhood was celebrating exactly how they were not supposed to be. And I'm assuming they're going to face felony charges for that. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's the same as shooting someone. So I don't know what the consequence would be, but it's assault with a deadly weapon. So, well, I'm glad she's okay. And for the record, it was not her or her friends who shot into the air.
No, they were celebrating very much as you were supposed to, and just enjoying the fireworks and not shooting off guns. So she's an innocent bystander, and so were all her friends and family whose night got ruined because somebody decided they wanted to shoot guns into the air to celebrate the new year.
Crazy. Very Florida. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good week.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Okay, let's end the show with some comments from all of you, my very favorite people. Let's see, comments on the whole graffiti as art fake manufactured controversy from Crosscut. Daniel on Patreon says, graffiti is art when it's done with consent of the property owner. Otherwise, it is always vandalism. The world is not your canvas. Either get permission to, quote, express your art or get the book thrown at you. Y on Patreon says, not calling crime a crime has been the reason for the downfall of this state, I think. I tend to agree. Went on to say, I am tired of giving excuses to criminal activities. Art does not excuse defacing walls, just as poverty does not excuse stealing. Very good comparison. Megan on Patreon, I went to Capitol Hill to buy a piece of art a couple weeks ago. That area looks so awful. I was uncomfortable being there. While waiting at a traffic light, I watched a man walk down a dumpster-filled alley, tagging every open space he could find with spray paint. Yeah, I agree. It is a dump up there. Let's see. Also, gosh, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show. Sometimes I change my opinions on things, okay? You know, I like to think that when provided with more information or a different point of view, I can change my opinion on stuff. And I've changed it slightly on the Speaker of the House debacle. You know, what I said on the show Wednesday is I think it's embarrassing for Republicans. I still believe it's embarrassing for Republicans. Because I think Democrats can easily use it against them to say, see, they're just a disaster. I don't think Republicans are showing a united front, which means I don't think it's going to be particularly meaningful that they have a House majority. But a few of you really got me thinking about how I was looking at it and about whether it's actually good for the country and good for our democracy. And I do feel like I've changed my opinion on it because you have these, and it was like, at any given point, like 20 to 22 Republican members of Congress who were dissenting on Kevin McCarthy. And they were having this robust debate about it on the House floor, where they were making arguments against him, where they were talking about, you know, not wanting these leaders in the House and the Senate to be the only ones making decisions. And I got to thinking about that based on your guys' comments. And I'm like, you know what, maybe that is healthy. To say for a party, members of a party to speak out against members of their own party and say, hey, we want something different, and to feel compelled and empowered to be able to do that. And, you know, look at Nancy Pelosi and how long she was the Speaker of the House. And I know that there were some progressives who didn't think she was the best leader for the party, but they wouldn't dare, like, speak out in that way. And so, yeah, maybe it is good for democracy to have a little bit of dissent within the ranks. And for it to just not be a foregone conclusion that, oh, the powers at B pick Kevin McCarthy, and so everyone needs to fall in line. So thanks to some of your thoughtful comments, I have changed my perspective. I still think it's embarrassing for Republicans. I don't think it's particularly bad for democracy. Jay Smith on Locals wrote, think there are lots of opinions on the selection of a speaker. At least it involves the democratic process of public debate and votes. Just last month, Congress passed a $1.7 trillion bill filled with pork, unread by most members, with also no public debate. Half the votes were by proxy, meaning members were not even present. Matthew on Locals wrote, I think you are completely wrong on the Speaker of the House issue. Politicians falling into line is what got us permanent swamp monsters Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. Kevin McCarthy should have stopped this embarrassment by bailing out after he lost the vote in the first round. Now I think even less of him than I did before. I don't blame Kevin McCarthy for not falling out after the first round. I mean, after all, they were actively negotiating. They were giving him things saying, hey, we'll vote for you if you make these changes to make things better. So I don't think that him dropping out of the first round was a good idea. But yeah, you guys have changed my opinion on this. So you know what? Even I can grow and learn. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sticking with me through a really tough week this week. I'm really grateful for you guys. You know, I continue to get so many nice emails about Dory Monson, and it's been really positive for me to read how much he meant to you guys too, even for those of you who never met him, and just reinforce, you know, why I love the guy so much. And so thank you guys sincerely for your kind comments, your kind words. I got so many text messages. It's made the week a lot easier. And just being here with all of you, you know, Dory loved, he was really proud of me for doing this and for branching out. And, you know, that's why I just remain so committed to it this week, too, is just being on the show. And, you know, I've been trying to remind myself of that. It's like, he was really proud of what I was doing. And I think he would have loved to hear how much all of you guys thought of him as well. So just again, like from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being just awesome people this week, being supportive, and your kind words and messages. I'll see all of you on Monday.